This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, a special edition of Washington Watch. It's that time of year when we express our gratitude for God's many blessings. And during the recent Values Voter Summit, we consistently heard messages of hope, messages of faith, family, and freedom. On today's show, we'll hear addresses made by House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, a friend of mine from Louisiana, and Counselor to the President Kellyanne Conway, who I interviewed during the 12th annual gathering of conservatives who traveled from all across the country to Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Still recovering from being shot in June at a congressional baseball team practice in Alexandria, Virginia, while Congressman Scalise talked about policy, he also spoke about his gratitude to God for God's mercy.
Well, I wanted to come back and introduce our next speaker because he is a longtime friend of mine. In fact, we were elected at the same time back in our home state of Louisiana in 1996. And we served together for almost a decade, and Steve Scalise has helped win the hearts of Americans on both sides of the aisle, as he has made very clear he will never give up. He will continue to fight for the things that he believes in, the things that you and I believe in. He is a great friend of Value Voters. He's a great friend of the Family Research Council, and he's a dear friend of mine. Please welcome the Majority Whip, Congressman Steve Scalise.
Thank you so much. Wow. God bless America. Thank you. Thank you. Wow. How heartwarming is that? Thank you so much. Thank you, my great friend Tony Perkins, not only for that great introduction, but for your leadership on the national stage to stand up for the values that made this country so great. So thank Tony Perkins for the work he does every day as the head of the Family Research Council. When I look out at this crowd and just feel that energy that that you just gave me, let me thank all of you for the prayers. My family had a tough time for the last few months, but it really was such an overwhelming experience that we directly received from people all across this country, people like you that just care about the greatness of America, and you saw what happened, and whether you knew me or not, you knew that this was an attack on the values of our country, and you reached out in prayer. And I want to share with you a little bit about what I reached out to call upon our God to do. We have a great and mighty God, and I am a living example of the miracles that he can produce. Right after I was shot, I fall down, and I just start crawling away from the gunfire. And once my arms gave out and I couldn't crawl anymore, I laid there, and the first thing I said is, I'm just going to pray. And I prayed to God. I prayed to him for a lot of very specific things, because I knew at that point there was nothing else I can do, and I've always had a deep faith, but of course a time like this you really are calling on God in a more important way, where you're really asking him to do some things that are pretty mighty. And I first thought about my daughter. I've got a 10-year-old daughter, and I said, God, please don't let my daughter walk up the aisle alone. It's just the first thing that came to my mind. Then I prayed that I could see my family again, my lovely wife Jennifer and our two kids. And then I heard other gunfire. The Capitol Police Security Detail that are commissioned to protect me started engaging with the shooter. I prayed that they were successful in carrying out their duty. And in such an heroic way, while being shot themselves, they did. They carried out that duty and they saved my life. They saved the life of everybody else there. And what it did for me is it showed me the calmness that God can give you in the most trying times. I mean, imagine being shot by a gunman who had come with, you know, pretty heavy artillery to do great damage to all of us. And after being hit, when I was there praying to God, I had a calmness and an ease about me because I knew it was in God's hands. And it was such a powerful thing. And then after that, when I was in the hospital, to see the overwhelming support and prayers that were coming from all around the country and all around the world, it was so overwhelming. And let me tell you, it lifted me up. It gave me strength. I cannot thank you enough for those prayers. It's the reason I'm here today. So thank you for that love and that compassion. I want to share a little bit for a few minutes about one of the things I really hungered for when I was in that hospital for 3.5 months. And, you know, the first month you're fighting for your life, the second month you're trying to figure out how you can get back to the way you were before as much or close you can. And then about that third month, I started getting stir crazy and saying, how can I get out of here? And I really longed to go back home. I love South Louisiana. We've got some of the greatest food in the world. And I started thinking about my favorite restaurants and getting home, going into my own house and seeing my kids there. They had come up and spent a lot of the summer with me through my healing process. But I also thought about getting back to work. I love doing the job that I have as an elected representative in Congress for Southeast Louisiana and as the House Majority Whip, and in a position where I can fight to influence the policies of this country in a better direction. And I really hungered to get back to work, and ultimately I was able to. And let me tell you how important some of the work we're doing is. The first week that I was back, we passed the Pain Capable Bill, the bill by my good friend Trent Franks that stops abortions after 20 weeks when we know the baby can feel pain. It was a very strong vote. It's a very important piece of legislation. Again, scientific data shows that the baby can feel pain after 20 weeks. This is a bill that's over in the Senate now. Let's encourage our senators to take this bill up, to vote on it, and hopefully to pass that bill, because Donald Trump, as President of the United States, says he wants to sign that bill into law. I was real excited to hear that President Trump came and addressed this group this morning, and what a great President Donald Trump is for this country when you think of what he's doing right now. Just to tell you the kind of person he is, within a day of when I was shot, President Trump and Melania went to the hospital. I was still going through surgeries, and I was unaware of what was going on then, but my wife Jennifer was there, and they consoled and gave her some real comforting in a really tough time. And then the president continued to call me from the hospital time in and time out to check on me just to see how I was doing. And, you know, I've enjoyed working with this president on a number of issues. I worked real closely with Tony Perkins when we were putting together our repeal and replace bill of Obamacare to make sure that included in that bill was a complete defunding of Planned Parenthood to make sure no taxpayer dollars go to fund abortion. And let me tell you, that fight is not over. We passed that bill in the House by a very thin majority. As the majority whip, I had to put that coalition together. And you're talking about threading a needle inside of a needle. It was very tough to do when you talk about some of our most conservative members that had some really important issues they wanted to address, and even some of our more moderate members that had their own concerns, and we had to put them all together. But we did. And then you look at the Senate, and they came within one vote, which means they cannot give up. They've got to keep fighting, keep working until they get that vote and pass that bill and ultimately get that onto President Trump's desk so he can sign it. Talking about God, you know, this got no attention, believe it or not, but a few months ago, one of my colleagues who doesn't believe that we should open up the house in prayer every day, which, by the way, we do. We have a chaplain. We open up the house in prayer every single day, right under that moniker, One Nation Under God. And God We Trust. And God We Trust is right there on the moniker. And yet he said that we shouldn't have to pray, and it went to federal court. And just Wednesday of this week, we got a ruling from the federal court that says, yes, indeed, we can open up the House chamber in prayer every day. Great victory. A great victory. And talking about President Trump, just imagine if that case went to the Supreme Court and Hillary Clinton was president, whoever she would have appointed, the 5-4 decision that would have come out that might have reversed that decision. But now, because of President Trump, we have Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court replacing Antonin Scalia to help ensure that we've got a court that will actually interpret the Constitution the way that it was written. Not the way that you think or I think, but the way it was actually written by our founding fathers and the amendments that came forward afterwards. So we're going to continue working with President Trump. Right now I'm working very closely with him on tax reform. And let me tell you how important tax reform is to families across America. First of all, the fact that we're going to lower every rate. We're going to lower rates for families. We're going to lower rates, the highest corporate rate in the world that is killing jobs in America. Let's bring those jobs back to America. How about if we repeal the death tax completely? Double the child tax credit. And what if, in our bill, by the way, this is one of the components of our bill, we simplify the tax code in a way that over 90% of all Americans can actually fill out their taxes on a postcard. Or for young people, you can fill it out on your smartphone. That's what tax reform is all about. Those are the things that we're working on. Let me tell you, it is such a great time in this country when you look at the opportunities we have. You can focus on the things that haven't been done. But let me tell you, when I came back with an even sharper focus. I know what's important in life. I always love my family. But I know now that you've got to sharpen even more on the things that are important to your life, your family, your friends, and the things that you love doing. And I've got a passion, a burning passion, to help fight for the greatness of America. We stand for the national anthem because we know what that means. But ultimately, the things that we are frustrated with, that we want government to do that it hasn't done, the things that President Trump wants on his desk that haven't gotten onto his desk, let's not give up that fight, whether it's repealing and replacing Obamacare, defunding Planned Parenthood, moving forward on the Johnson Amendment, which I'm very happy to be working with Tony Perkins on, to make sure that people of religious faith cannot continue to be intimidated by the IRS to suppress their political views. We've got to stop that policy. President Trump wants that bill on his desk. Let's fight to get it on his desk. This is a great time to be in America. This is a great time to be in the fight. And what all of you do as values voters, as you fight to make sure that these critical issues that are important to the values of our country are front and center in this great national debate. It's great to be here. It's great to be alive. It's great to be with all of you. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you.
And that message of gratitude from Congressman Steve Scalise brought the audience to its feet several times. And yes, my friend Steve, we are thankful you are alive. Well, coming up next, counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, shares the side of President Trump that the liberal media fails to report. That's next on this edition of Washington Watch.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. You can keep up with us, TonyPerkins.com or on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, if you recall, Kellyanne Conway became the first woman to successfully lead a presidential campaign in 2016. Now she serves as a counselor to the president. I had the opportunity to interview Kellyanne on the stage at the Values Voter Summit held at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. As you most likely know, the liberal media has demonized President Trump and has been critical about his attitude and actions toward women. Well, listen as Kellyanne debunks that rhetoric.
Well, Kellyanne, welcome back to the Values Voter Summit. You were actually at the very first Values Voter Summit.
2006?
Yes, right. Yes. So you are a familiar face here.
That was a bad year, actually, for Republicans because they lost their way.
It was, but fortunately they have found it once again with your help. And I want to talk about this for just a moment because you were the first female to successfully lead a presidential campaign. And I also know about your history. I won't go into how you learned all about that, about picking blueberries and being the blueberry queen. But the role of your faith, and I mean, I've known you for years. You've been a part of the pro. I mean, you're not. You come here as one of us. You don't come to talk to us. You're a part of us. Your faith, you're pro-life, you have been in the pro-family movement. How did that shape where you are today in terms of being a counselor to the President of the United States?
Tony, first of all, thank you very much for having me, for having the President earlier. And I did in part come today because I wanted to thank each and every one of you. This is the first Values Voter Summit since the election. You have your summits very close to the election each year. And I wanted to thank each of you, whether you held firm, you cast your ballot, you helped others get to the ballot box, if you knocked on a door or held your own in an argument with an in-law or a neighbor last year. However, if you gave a couple bucks to the campaign, however you contributed in your own way, I just came to say thank you on behalf of all of us and to urge you to keep on fighting The president said very recently in a different forum, Tony, that he has a lot of alignment with the people in this room because he understands what it's like to be under siege. And I know you do as well. And we very much appreciate you standing firm and loving your country, freedom, democracy, and pushing those forward as well. Now, I actually don't know how I would be able to do any of this without my faith. And that is because it's a bedrock, because when you are raised in a faith-centric household, you realize from the very beginning that there's always something bigger and better than you. And that sort of that humility is a very important attribute to take to any position that has such great gravity and responsibility, as I feel ours do in the White House. I feel incredibly privileged and blessed to serve my country at this moment in this position. And if I approach it that way, I'm approaching it as a woman of faith, and somebody who knows that for every time there is a season, and that God places us in certain areas at certain points in our life. Now, the greatest professional privilege of my life is to work for the president, the vice president, and this great nation. The greatest privilege of my life by far is being mother to those four children. And that nothing compares to that for me. And I actually think having a full life is very important to me because it really cuts down on all the noise and the nonsense, and it puts things into perspective immediately and constantly. It's really great to be impervious to naysayers and critics. I turned my notifications off on Twitter in January, February. It changed life. I recommend everybody do it. Some people aren't capable of it because they spend all day looking at their notifications and liking people who said something nice about them or arguing with people who didn't. It's just I'm not in the White House to read about myself. I'm there to serve and there to work on significant issues and challenges of the day. And that's been very helpful. You can't do that without faith, though, because if you're so involved with yourself, then you'll get caught up in all of that, the praise and the criticism, frankly. So this is very balancing. Also, my faith informs my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I've often said, Tony probably said here at Values Voter Summit over the years, that to attract people politically, you must first understand them culturally. Show me how somebody spends his or her weekend, I'll tell you how they're going to vote. And for me, my faith informs many of my beliefs. I am pro-life. I am very proudly pro-life. The President of the United States sent the Vice President and me to the March for Life back in January, and I was very proud to stand on that stage and look out at thousands and thousands of people standing there in the cold because they believe in probably millions more around the country watching on TV or doing their part that weekend to profess their pro-life views. And why that's important is I've been working on pro-life messaging for decades, literally. And it took a Manhattan billionaire male who for part of his adult life was pro-choice for abortion rights to give the most impassioned defense of life I had ever heard from a presidential debate podium on October 19th last year. And that's really important. Because it also helps you to respect other people's viewpoints. But what I'm really struck in this audience, Tony, is all the applause the president got, because we're reminded again that evangelical Christians at the ballot box, in conversation, in their everyday lives, they're not monolithic, they're not single-issue voters, they're passionate about the pro-life, pro-family agenda. But listen to the applause the president got when he talked about health care, tax reform, the Iran deal, struggles around the world, combating terrorism. I think all of you are very happy that you have a president that's actually willing to call terrorists terrorists.
Yeah. Speaking of notifications, I've been waiting for that tweet to come in from the real Donald Trump about the Values Voter Summit. So I imagine that's going to be coming shortly, huh? No comment.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. That was Kellyanne Conway, special advisor to the president, counselor to the president. When we return, we'll continue that conversation with counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God, but progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
Back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch, looking back on a couple of key messages from the Values Voter Summit. We're serving up for you now an interview that I did on stage at the Values Voter Summit with Counselor to the President Kellyanne Conway. The interesting side of this, and this is what's interesting, is you hear what the media won't tell you. You know, in spite of how the media portrays President Trump, Kellyanne says working at the White House and working for this president is an honor. Listen.
Speaking of notifications, I've been waiting for that tweet to come in from the real Donald Trump about the Values Voters Summit. So I imagine that's going to be coming shortly, huh? No comment. You mentioned your greatest privilege is to be a mom of your four children. You have a you're serving a president who understands the value and the importance of family. I've seen it in his interaction with his children, and I think it makes it helpful to you as a mom to be able to work for somebody like that.
Well, that's the great untold story, I think, about the White House as a workplace. Across corporate America, you sometimes get these handbooks, and page 586 will talk all about the family-friendly policies of that corporation. And then when you try to execute on them by taking a half a day off or maybe talking about a little vacation with your family, it becomes very difficult then in some places to execute on those family-friendly policies that are in writing. I work in a White House. I work in a workplace where working moms and certainly women are respected and elevated to the highest positions. This is a place where Donald Trump's just always been comfortable. He took a chance on women in New York real estate when no one else would. And it's very comfortable and natural for Donald Trump and now President Trump to surround himself to elevate and promote women to high positions and for him to always be respectful, very respectful, of who we are personally, what our home life is like, whether we're married or not, have children or not, just, you know, what is it like? He's always interested in the personal story of everyone. And he's a great storyteller himself, so it's a wonderful way to engage with a boss. But he also, he's somebody who, you saw yesterday, he elevated another woman to a cabinet post, and now we'll have two women if she's confirmed as the number one and number two at Department of Homeland Security. And the thing about Donald Trump that I've never heard him say, and he certainly never said to me, is I think this will help with the women, or I think this will, this is great because you're a woman. He doesn't see it that way. He sees it, and I think the identity politics that the other side is so wrapped up in is unfortunate and regrettable in many ways, because you've got to look at the person for who they are, very complex individuals, certainly in many different ways, demographically, attitudinally, et cetera, situationally. But if I didn't work for a president, any vice president, and their spouses, all four of whom I know well and honor and admire deeply, if I didn't work for them and I didn't know who they were and how family-centric they are, then I wouldn't be there. There'd be no reason to be there. And I appreciate that, because I hear a lot of people on their soapboxes and the high horse cavalry, I call them, the high horse cavalry, always talking about women's rights and women in the workplace and women empowerment. I'm in an environment where it's practiced regularly. I've never felt otherwise. And I think that there's a great juxtaposition going on right now. You see one of the major influencers in Hollywood and a major Democratic donor really ensnared in some pretty ugly stuff, allegedly. And the juxtaposition of that is that I at least am, you know, in a place where women are respected. Mm. And I appreciate that as a working mom. And I also want to tell each of you that to tell your daughters and granddaughters that we kept open the first female president of the United States job. So we have to think about that.
By the way, if you need another female recommendation for Homeland Security, my wife is really good with a shotgun around the house. So the president, every time I have spoken to the president since the election, he reminds me of how strong the evangelical social conservative vote was for him, and how much we love him. And we do. We love him and we appreciate him. And he reminded us of the promises that he made. In fact, I remember when he promised he would come back if successful, and he kept that promise. He was back here today. And how important is it to this administration that the entire administration stand with the president in the fulfillment of the promises he made to the American people?
It is very important. And I just want to correct the record slightly. We don't look at you as voters. We look at you as fellow Americans, fellow travelers on this journey. And if there are people in this audience, there are certainly people here who didn't vote for President Trump. He's your president, and he's there for you. And he said that beginning on November 9th, he said that I will be the president of all Americans, even those who didn't support me. And he means that, and he continues to do that. Now, he made promises, and he looks at some of these not just as campaign promises, but as necessities in our time, as moral imperatives. Repealing and replacing Obamacare, I saw a journalist today had said or wrote somewhere that the reason he wants to repeal Obamacare is because it has the word Obama in it.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. That was Kellyanne Conway, special advisor to the president, counselor to the president. When we return, we'll continue that conversation with counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. You can keep up with us, TonyPerkins.com or on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, if you recall, Kellyanne Conway became the first woman to successfully lead a presidential campaign in 2016. Now she serves as a counselor to the president. I had the opportunity to interview Kellyanne on the stage at the Values Voter Summit held at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. Listen.
Repealing and replacing Obamacare, I saw a journalist today had said or wrote somewhere that the reason he wants to repeal Obamacare is because it has the word Obama in it. That is just not true. It's for the 28 million Americans. I know. Don't flatter yourself. It's for the 28 million... It's for the 28 million Americans who don't have health insurance. It's for the people who were lied to that they can keep their doctor, keep their plan. It's for all those who he's helping yesterday through that executive order, Tony, who are caught in the middle between people like you and me who get our 175 million or so Americans who get their health benefits through their employers, other millions of Americans who get them through the government, through Medicaid, Medicare, through TRICARE, for example. It's those who can't afford, those small business owners who can't afford the coverage. It's because the premium's doubled. It's because the insurers have fled the exchanges. It's because we spent gazillions of dollars on websites that didn't even work, let alone enroll anyone. That's the reason. Don't confuse principles with personalities. Do not confuse policies with politics. And this is why he's there. And I know you've gone through the list of, you know, his pro-life appointments, Mexico City policy on day two or three of his administration. He's done so many things that really are there to help people that don't get covered. The incomplete coverage, I think, is really regrettable because people aren't being connected with the information they need to know what's important to them. But you know, to your point, should the administration, is he looking for administration-wide support? The president handpicked his cabinet, and the president is somebody who is he's an excellent listener. I know that firsthand. Yeah. He accepts and expects differing viewpoints, inputs, individuals, ideas. This is the way he's been a successful businessman his whole career, and he takes that into the White House because he believes in listening and negotiating and learning. But he is the ultimate decision maker. I like to run around and say, hey, folks, I'm now going to read you a list in the White House or in the administration of everybody who is elected to anything here. If you don't see yourself on the list, get with the program or get out. Here's the list. Donald J. Trump, Michael R. Pence. Are you on the list? And it's true because he is the ultimate decision maker. He was elected by the people to be the president of the United States. And he takes that responsibility very seriously, but he never takes it monolithically, meaning by himself, you know, in an isolated fashion. He listens. And I think an administration, a cabinet, frankly, that he has handpicked is one that he engages with regularly. And I love watching it up close and personal because it's frankly the way a democracy should run, is taking all those the information and puts, even if he says to me, I don't agree with that, I know he heard it. It doesn't matter to me. It matters that he gets information that is important in terms of the decision-making process.
I want to get personal for just a moment here, Kellyanne, as the senior, not too personal, but this is the senior counselor to the president. What's that like? And what's kind of at, let us see kind of a day in the life of Kellyanne.
Sure. Well, that you don't want to see. That begins really early in the morning, getting four kids off to new schools and their new life here in Washington. I'm there in the morning until they leave. So that's really terrific because we were separated for the end of their school year last year and the beginning of my tenure here. And so that's wonderful. And talk about humbling yourself. when you can't find that sock or the uniform or the homework or the, it's really funny. And I know for all those out there whose big decisions in the morning are yoga or Pilates or the green juice or the fruit juice, I feel really blessed to have a different set of decisions in the morning. But so for me, when I get to the White House in the morning, I first of all say a prayer as I walk in because every day I ask the Lord to bless everyone who works in that building, everyone who that building represents across the country, to pray for our safety and our security. Our understanding, wisdom. I know that, you know, wisdom is found through a multitude of counselors. I'm glad I'm one of them, literally. And then my day is mainly in policy meetings because this president, this was a great example, Tony. This week, there were like six major policy initiatives: immigration, tax reform, the healthcare EO, Iran today, CSRs overnight. There's just always something happening in the Trump pace that is this administration. And so most of my day is spent in policy meetings. I am, as counselor of the president, I am there to support the press and comm shops. I'm not part of the press and comm shop, but we have very talented people there, obviously. But I'm there to support, and I spend about 3 or 5% of my time, I would say, engaging with media or on TV. But you can't be an effective communicator unless you understand the policy. You just can't throw yourself out there and somebody handing you talking points. You really have to understand the ins and outs of policy. And I frankly think that's what the country deserves to hear, which is, how is this going to help me? Or I'm worried about this policy. Tell me why it shouldn't be. And so that's very important. So that's everything from tax reform to healthcare to immigration to some of the foreign policy meetings, infrastructure meetings. And then some of the issues that are directly in my portfolio, they're a little bit more specific, like opioids. I spend probably 10% of my day now, which is a lot, frankly, on the opioid issue. Tasked with that in the West Wing. Very happy to have the President and the First Lady and all of our administration, really the entire cabinet, engaged on this issue. It is the scourge of our times, and it's just taking the lives. It is the epidemic next door. This is not somebody else's kid, somebody else's community, somebody else's coworker. It's all of us, and it's our responsibility as a nation to get on the winning side of this, because currently we're on the losing side of this. And then issues like military spouse employment, for example. So there you go. I'm just giving some examples out of the portfolio. So it's just a dizzying pace of meetings. And also because I spent decades as a pollster to try to bring the data in, whether it's public opinion data or economic data or cultural data, any kind of studies that are out there that are relevant to what any of my coworkers are working on. And then finally, I tend to travel frequently for the president, for the administration. I'm given my own schedule some days. Last Friday was in Roanoke, Virginia, for example, for National Manufacturing Day. Certainly, I traveled with the First Lady this week to West Virginia. So that I do find myself doing more and more speeches and more just more touch Americans, which I love. And I had the great privilege of 2 decades plus, Tony, as a pollster. To my job was, how's it playing in Peoria? I went to go find out. So I visited 48 of the 50 states. I got numbers 49 and 50 this summer with my children and husband. But I had visited all these states to hear from people what they think and how they feel and to get their input. So I think that has equipped me tremendously to remember why we're there. It's for the country. And to understand why people may disagree. I do think a lot of these issues right now suffer from what I call information underload. We all suffer from information overload, but I think you're not being told everything you need to be told about these issues. So I would say go right onto whitehouse.gov and you'll get a lot of the information, or pay attention to what the president is saying and doing that day and not getting the filtered version of what he said or did. And just see, I think that's what's so great about 2017, where you can just get the information that you seek, and that is happening. Sometimes people they're not getting the information. I think not connecting our veterans with all the great things that have happened for them, for example, not telling Americans the truth about how they'll benefit from meaningful tax cuts and what it truly would mean to have a more competitive environment to repatriate these trillions of dollars that are sitting offshore legally, to what it means to have an expanded child care and elder care tax credit, how it impacts you to have employers and job creators go from 35% to 20% for their tax. But you say, well, I'm an employee, not an employer. It affects you mightily, because that money gets reinvested in its employees, in the inventory, in the infrastructure that surrounds that company. Why are you trying to repeal and replace Obamacare? Hasn't it helped Americans? It has helped many Americans, but it's hurt many more. And we've had those Obamacare victims into the White House. They are real people. They have names. I've seen them in press accounts with quotes around them, Obamacare victims in quotes. They're real people. They've come to the White House. They told us their stories. And we're there to help them. And if you feel like you could be one tiny molecule in helping people, that's a privilege beyond anything I ever thought growing up, being raised by a single mom, very modestly but very faithfully. And I think that's the true American dream. When that's true power, when you're in a position to actually help other people and you take that position, you refuse to look the other way and you refuse to give up or give in. And that's, I think, why we're there. I know it's why the president's there. I know it's why he and his family and the vice president and his family have agreed to serve at this time, at this level.
Kellyanne, speaking of help, we're almost out of time, but how can people across America who care deeply about this country, how can they help the president advance the agenda, which were the promises made, and advance this message that the president and the White House that you just articulated are carrying out across the country? How can they help?
First of all, I have to say you are helping. And without having ambassadors for that message all across the country, we won't succeed the way we can, because it's incredibly important that people feel like they're part of this. I think it's something that Mr. Trump was able to do in his campaign, really his idea, his voice, his choice, not to erect a traditional conventional political campaign, but to build a movement, and people felt like they were part of it. That's a campaign. That's over. This is much more important, because this is our nation. And what you can do is to have a 7-second, 70-second, 7-minute version for anybody who's willing to listen. Why I support the president is X, or the best things I think he's done for us so far are X, Y, and Z, or why it's important we get tax cuts through now, and explain to them why you feel that way, why I think he's the most, faith-centric, pro-life president in our lifetimes. You come up with the answer in your own voice. And the reason it's important that it's your voice is because you're much more effective than any of us can be, for the following reasons. People see you in their churches, in their communities, in their places of work, in their places of worship, and they will say, you know what, I like you and you're like me. Those two attributes are so incredibly important, to have that identity with people. that sort of that community identity with people. Hey, I like you, you're affable, you're accessible, I've seen you around, our kids go to the same school, we go to the same church or the same community center, we live in the same neighborhood. I like you, and more importantly, the real connective tissue, you're like me. And that's much more accessible and much more relatable and much more authentic than getting the message, you know, in any other number of ways. The other thing is, I'm going to end by telling a story, Tony. You didn't expect me to tell this story, but this is a great example of reaching out to us where you think we can be of assistance, where there's a great opportunity for someone in the administration or the president or vice president to come and to speak. Last August 17th, it was announced that the president had expanded his campaign team. So the next day, I was on for my first phone call as campaign manager as the president went to the airport and he was giving his regret speech that night in North Carolina. And I said, tomorrow, Mr. Trump, Governor Pence has agreed to clear his schedule and he's going to go down to Baton Rouge because they were suffering from severe flooding. And I said, and we were all looking at the images on the TV with coffins floating down the river and people really in great need, our brothers and sisters in need, as we've seen all too recently, all too often this year. And I said, the governor is going to go down and we're going to connect him with some folks on the ground and some first responders. Tony Perkins is involved in his church, and I ran through the list with him, and he said, that sounds great, could I go too? And I said, well... I said, oh gosh, it's my first day on the job. What is the answer? I said, I guess the answer is always yes, of course you can go. And then we figure out how to make it happen. I see that there's a fundraiser in Minnesota. There's a speech in this place. And that was such a telling moment to me. And that is such the essence of this president, that he comes up with these ideas. And he says he intuitively knows where he should be to help. And he went down. The two of them went down to Baton Rouge, as you know. I think they wrote a check to your... church, but that they learned, they listened and they learned and they helped. And I remember the sitting president was on his vacation, which he's entitled to have, but never went down. The other candidate never went down. It's called it something like a political stunt or a photo op, which is not the way the people in Baton Rouge felt about it. And that's what I want to tell you. It's a great story. And it's a great, I think, great answer. It's a great story, but it's a, I hope, apt answer to your question of what can you do. You can also bring to our attention, you know, great stories of triumph and recovery and hardiness, the grit and determination of America, and then point out to us people in need, because those community, we are the federal government, we are the presidency, great, but we believe that those closest to the people in need are those best equipped to know how we can best help, and we'd like to hear that.
Kellyanne Conway, thank you so much for being here.
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch as we look back on a couple of key messages from this year's Values Voter Summit. And as we were listening to Kellyanne, isn't it reassuring to know that there are people like Kellyanne who stand firm on their faith and push for faith, family, and freedom, and have the freedom to do so in an administration that is not hostile to those values? Well, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. If you missed any of this, check it out. It's all archived at tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where it says, when you've done everything you can do, when you pray, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com.